Hi, it's Tony. On today's show, we'll talk to Michael Wilbon about his love of everything up and down the I-95 corridor, and we'll talk to Charlie Steiner about the excitement surrounding the Dodgers this season, and also about the current location of the coveted Aloha Tower calendar. But first, let's do some commerce.
I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass, busted draft pick, and game-changing play.
Or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow and listen to Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.
I mean, the possibilities are limitless, Kevin.
What if Portland drafted Michael Jordan?
What if the NBA never vetoed the Chris Paul trade to the Lakers?
That's a butterfly effect for real.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Leads to this, which is the all-time top five. The all-time top five events in your life that you say, I was at that. I write these lists out all the time. I'm just going to tell you what I got. And then, because I'm asking you to do this cold, and unless you've thought about this a lot, I'll read mine first, and then you can have yours.
Yeah.
Okay?
Go ahead.
I got Flutie. Ah. I got Leitner, because I sat next to you. So I got Leitner.
The Tony Kornheiser Show is on now.
Now, just going back to that with Bob Ryan, he talked about five games he would like to play over, see over, and see, stuff
yes,
like that.
Right.
But he didn't do a top five the way I was doing a top five.
You were like, these are just the greatest moments, right?
Yeah, that I've ever been to.
Right.
It's interesting because one of mine, and I maybe my top moment actually, for me, just because of the anticipation and because of the attention, and which was different than the Leitner game and the Flutie game and even Reggie Jackson, even that. I always tell people Carl Lewis and Ben Johnson in the finals of the 100-meter dash in Seoul. And yesterday I was going through the dial, and I landed on the World Indoor Track Championships in Glasgow. And I watched it for about an hour and a half. I knew nobody who was in them. I knew, you know, some of the races. This is indoor track. Indoor track's really different than outdoor track. It's a shorter track. There are more laps to a race. It's... You know, there are indoor world records, and they never equal the outdoor world records. They don't. But I really watch it because I like to watch track and field. I do. I like to watch. To me, there's nothing more satisfying in sports than eight people running down a track and the winner hits the ribbon.
Yeah.
And that's just it. I mean, you know who the winner is.
There's
the
a purity
winner hits
to
the
it.
Ribbon. Yeah, I just
Absolutely.
Love it. I just love it and would watch it anywhere, anytime, no matter who was competing. I mean, I just think that it's great. And what I watched, a women's 3000 and, you know, and just whatever was on, I watched turtles and stuff like that. And it was really good. When I was at the New York Times, I used to cover the indoor track at Madison Square Garden. They used to have two or three meets, including the Milrose games. And I always got a big kick out of that. The first time I ever saw Guy Drew, who was a Frenchman who won a gold medal in the Olympics in the outdoor hurdles, in the real hurdles. I saw him do 60-yard hurdles. And one of the things that's so cool about indoor track, at least it was in the Garden, and it was yesterday in Glasgow, when you have that sprint, then they run into a wall. The walls are padded.
Oh.
They're completely padded. They have about 10 yards is all they have. And they fly into, you know, a rubber wall, and they fall off, and then they go back out and celebrate if they've won. It's really a very cool looking thing. So I don't know if anybody saw that yesterday. It was on NBC because I was waiting for the golf, which was so, it was not rained out, but was so close to being rained out. The golf will finish today, right, Michael? The guy that I wanted to win, that guy, David Skins, the 42-year-old from England, who was tied for the lead going into the final round. By the time, and he probably played four or five holes. He was like three or four back by then yesterday. Did you watch any of it?
I didn't, just because of the weather, but you have an interesting leaderboard because they're doing the restart today, this morning, but you see Jake Knapp's back up there again.
Yeah, he's the blonde kid with the big, big muscular arms. I think he likes to taper the sleeves on his shirt so you can see his arms.
Oh, he was a bouncer.
And Ekrode is up there. Well, he was a bouncer at a bar. Ekrode is up there, and Shane Lowry is the guy I would think would win. No?
I'm kind of rooting for
and,
I mean,
and Van Royen.
Cashmere Keith, one of the best-dressed guys on tour. But again, most eyes in golf are just wondering what the effect of this tournament that won't end is on the pro member up at Seminole, which is supposed to start this morning as well. And they have a morning and afternoon draw. So it looks like most of the players who were playing will be ready to go. And by most, I mean Rory has finished, so he's ready to go.
And Rory was playing with his father in the Seminole pro member. His dad is a member. That's pretty good father-son team. Who you got?
I wouldn't want to be giving them shots. You bring your grandson out for one of his first tournaments, and on the tee, now driving Jerry McIlroy, Rory McIlroy.
So one of the things that I've noticed, with the exception of the tournament at Riviera, which Hideki Matsuyama won, and Hideki Matsuyama is one of the five best players in the world. Other than that, the people who have won and the people on the leaderboard in the PGA Tour in the calendar year of 2024 are largely, and I say this honestly, unknown to me. I don't know who they are. The amateur kid from Alabama who won, the guy from France who won, Jake, not from State Farm, Jake with the blonde hair and the guns who won. Michael, Jackies? I'd never heard of these people. I'd never heard of them, right?
Look, I think this is one of the secrets of what the PGA Tour has been for a long time, which was there's always been sort of two realities of it, which is you have the majors, which are not theirs. You have a couple of great tournaments, whether it's by the nature of the course and its history, like Riviera, or by the nature of a finisher, whether it's the amateur or Hideki at Riviera, who has this all-time back nine, and you 62. Can't predict that, you can't control it, which is why they went to these signature events to try and see if you throw more of the best players into the cauldron, are you going to get some of those best finishes? And we were truly spoiled with the memories that Tiger created at just what you'd consider run-of-the-mill PGA Tour events. So you have a tournament that's coming up. The Arnold Palmer Invitational always has some of those moments. A lot of them are, attributed to Tiger. But it's not just a live versus PGA type of question. It's the nature of golf. It's the nature of full field. And even this week, it's the nature of an outside event that's played with weather, where it does affect what sort of finish you get.
Speaking of golf, when George Bushby was here last week.
Oh, that's right.
And we asked him, do you want to talk? He's the head pro at Rehoboth Beach. Do you want to talk? He said, no, I don't want to talk. I talked to him the other day. He said, everybody's killing me because I didn't talk. He says, Eddie Brown is killing me. Jay Whitby's killing me. They're all killing me. I said, you could have talked.
You could have talked.
And he says, I have to make up for this.
Giving us a course conditions update.
Yeah. He said, I have to make up for this.
See how the back nine's playing.
Back nine's underwater at Rehoboth. It's underwater.
Submerged right
now. You can't play it.
No.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy. I wanted to just do one. Oh, I wanted to say this. When I go to the beach, I always look at Candy Kitchen. Candy Kitchen the decoration is always the same. It's very brightly colored pinks and yellows and greens and whites. And all Candy Kitchen stores and all Candy Kitchen signs look the same. And I boycotted Candy Kitchen for the last 8 or 10 years because I don't like the watermelon fruit slices.
It's one particular item.
I like all the other fruit slices, but I don't like the watermelon, and they won't remove them for me. So I have boycotted Candy Kitchen. The other day I had a Candy Kitchen moment. I said, I have to go to Candy Kitchen. And I bought the milk chocolate nonpareils, and I bought the raspberry truffles, and I bought a milk chocolate candy with jelly inside. Jelly. And not hard enough to take your teeth out. You
right.
can bite into it.
Safety,
it's okay.
Yes.
I spent about $30 for not a lot of candy. And I was delighted. I was delighted to do it. I'm back in the fold. Although I did say to the woman behind the counter, will you take out the watermelon? She said no.
Ugh.
I'd already paid for it. I could not leave in a huff at that point. And I didn't want to, because I wanted to go there.
So wasn't they should, if you say, look, I'll give you an extra $5, I just don't want the watermelons.
Yeah, I don't want them touching and corrupting the other ones either. Yeah. I don't like the taste
Or provide
of those.
Like a build your own box, pay a premium for it, but
yes.
at least it's
yeah,
not
that's what
mess
I'd like
up
to do.
Yes.
The balance of their main blend.
Yes.
Yeah, so anyway.
Or try throwing down a 20 and see what that gets you.
Well, I don't. Well, that's a pretty good idea.
Yeah.
Got no pictures for Sonny, so maybe it can work for me. Got no cameras for Sonny throwing down 20s. Caitlin Clark, I watched that game. We have to talk about that with Mike Wilbon. We'll talk about Chris Mortensen with Mike Wilbon. I will say I didn't know Chris well. I did not. I knew him to say hi, and I really liked his work because he was a legitimate newspaper sports writer.
Started Atlanta Journal-Gazette, right?
Atlanta Journal-Constitution. That was the largest paper he worked at. He started in Southern California, where he was born. He was born in Torrance, Southern California. So I wrote my friend Mike Litwin, who started out at the LA Times, because I knew he knew Mort. And he said Mort was great. He said Mort was younger than... He said when he was on the LA Dodgers beat, he said it's the worst... couple of years of his life, he hated being on the Dodgers beat. There are 9 guys full time, and Mort was on the beat, and Mort was like 19 or 20 at the time. He said every story he got every story, got it ahead of everybody else. He was working for something called the Daily Sea Breeze. I mean, it wasn't the LA Times. It wasn't the LA Herald Examiner. It wasn't anything that said Los Angeles on it. So the players would think, ooh, I read this every day and I should talk to this guy. No, it was something else. And he beat everybody to everything. So he was a really, truly terrific reporter. Terrific. I'm sure that Mike and I will talk about that. And hopefully, we'll acknowledge it in PTI today. So we'll take a break. And when we come back, Mike Litwin joins us. I'm Tony Kornheiser. What?
Mike Wilbon.
Oh, I said Mike Wilbon. I said Mike Litwin. Yeah.
Yes.
It's an old age moment on my mind. Litwin and Wilbon sound the same.
They do a little bit, yeah.
Wilbon. Not Lilbon, Wilbon when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us by Joe Klein in Parma Heights, Ohio, who writes, attached, you'll find the music of the Ohio-based Year of the Buffalo, along with permission from lyricist and lead singer Jake Trigo, for the band's songs to be played. As Jake mentions in the below bio, he's going through treatment for cancer. To know him is to know toughness, grace, and perseverance, as well as a world-class songwriter and lyricist. I would encourage Littles to visit Jake's Instagram page. And Joe Klein also says, tell JS in Buffalo and Tom R in Massachusetts, never revere to eat it. Again, the name of the group is The Year of the Buffalo, and they play in Michael Wilbon. ESPN lost a valued and wonderful reporter when Chris Mortensen died yesterday at 72 years old. How I didn't know Mort well. I admired him. I said hello, and I know people who know him well. Were you ever out with him on the beat? Did you ever cover things with Mort?
Oh, yeah. Yes, Tony. And you know, much of the chronicling of Mort now, after his passing, has talked about his time at ESPN, which is sort of easy.
Yeah.
Because everybody can see that. I knew Mort way before we got to ESPN. I think the reports say that Mort started at ESPN in 1991. Well, hell, he's been around 15 years doing his work before that.
Oh, more. So, he'd been around more. Yeah, 20. He'd been around 20.
Well, he'd been about 15 years, because by 1991, I'd been around 11 years. So, yeah, Mort was more like 16, 17 years by then.
And Mort started very young. He started like he was 19 years old. Yeah.
And Mort, so, of course, you know, it was more than just the NFL for ESPN that Mort covered.
That's,
I mean, he covered college football. I mean, I was in the South so much in the 80s. I'd run into Mort all the time in press boxes. Yes. In college football games, at pro football games. And he was working, you know, in Atlanta. He was covering the beat, covering the sport for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution long before ESPN. I don't pair Mort with ESPN. People do that now because that's what they see. But Mort had a whole career before that, and he was great.
He covered.
It.
He started out as a baseball writer, covered the Dodgers in California, covered the Braves.
Wanting to do
baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we all did. And so even so, in press boxes on a Sunday, we'd still be peeking in on what was going on in October on the on the Fall Classic.
Sure.
We'd still be paying attention to that, talking about, hey, you see your Braves are down 5-2 in this, you know. And so his career is so much more than it's being painted, and it's, you know, Mort was great at a lot of stuff. And then ultimately he became known for, and almost singularly known for, his coverage of the NFL for ESPN. And he was pleasant. I'm not going to say we had many dinners. We probably had a few. But he was a pleasure to be around. He was a professional, and people respected him, and you knew that because we were sort of in competition, all of us at the various big newspapers then, as you know. And the people who talked to Mort had great respect for him. And then when he started to do the thing that he became known for, he broke stories because people trusted him. And Peyton Manning spoke to that very eloquently yesterday.
Yeah, so Chris Mortensen, you know, with Wilbon and myself, Chris Mortensen is a newspaper guy first. And he, of course, because we are newspaper guys first, we have no idea what we're doing, how we got into this. But because it's a different ethic. It's just a different ethic. And, Mike, he was one of the first full-time newspaper guys to go to ESPN.
Yeah.
And I think it's fair to credit him with being part of setting the standard for what was then actual journalism at ESPN. Don't you agree?
Yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. I mean, there are people who certainly came before Mort, and they went into the profession differently. You know, even go back to Brent Musburger, who's going to go, you know, I mean, Brent is 20 years before Mort. Not 20. But,
yeah.
You know, 10 plus.
Dick Schaap.
Yeah, before Brent.
Yep.
And there was that layer of guys who are, we talk about pioneers. They're the pioneers. And then Mort. And yes, Tony, he brought that ethic of how you report a story. And it wasn't going to be about hype. And it wasn't going to be about headlines. It wasn't about clickbait. It wasn't. It wasn't any of that. Moore was going to get
was
a story.
Though, clickbait.
Moore was at practice. Okay? Moore was at practice. There were times I might have flown out to Thousand Oaks, California, because Jimmy Johnson said, yes, I'll talk to you. And I'd fly out there, and the person who was there already at practice when I got there was Mort. Because Mort was already working on something. So
that
Mort
really
was
good.
At the front
that
door,
nice
man.
Guy.
He was always there. And he was,
yes.
And clearly he was welcome by everybody virtually in the NFL establishment.
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that is true, and so we pay our respects to him.
Yeah, absolutely.
I watched Caitlin Clark yesterday. That was actually appointment viewing for me. I watched her, you know, break. And I've got to say this. Yes, she has more points in her D1 college career than Pete Maravich. Let's not go any further.
Let's not make stupid comparisons. I don't even care about that. Or I don't even quote it. I don't even say it. It's completely irrelevant to me.
Yeah, I mean, so we're not going to go into that, and we're not going to get sucked down the rabbit hole of comparing her to Pete Maravich. We're going to stop that.
Right.
She's a terrific talent. She is compelling to watch. She takes a lot of shots.
Yeah.
She does. I'm not saying they're bad shots. I'm saying she takes a lot of shots.
Yeah.
She does think pass first. Even yesterday when you knew she was going to break the record, she was throwing 30-foot lead passes to somebody breaking down the court. She really, really wants to have assists. I mean, she's really good in that regard. And she's the most compelling player in college basketball today, men or women, right now. There's no question about that. Your thoughts about her future in pro basketball?
Tony, I think as I look at people that I wondered about, I didn't really doubt Steph Curry. I was a Steph Curry fan because I saw him play in college in person a time or two.
Yeah.
But I wondered, how was that going to translate? Was it going to translate? It did. You know, I was much more suspect and skeptical of Trae Young.
Yes.
It translates. I mean, the guy's averaged, you know, damn near 30 points a game from the time he walked in the league. So, there, you know, when you look at smaller people, and Caitlin Clark is 6 feet, when you shoot the ball brilliantly now, it can transform. It translates to the next level. It does convey, usually. And it can be transformative. And Caitlin Clark has that in abundance, spectacularly. Dame Lillard. There are people who are smaller relative to the giants they play with, and they still have this outsized impact. And there's every reason to put Caitlin Clark in their category in terms of how they have reshaped and impacted basketball. But we mentioned one name, and now I am going to go back to that name, Pete Maravich. You know, I was a little kid when Pete Maravich was doing his thing, and you remember him much more brilliantly.
Yeah, I love him. He's the best.
There's only one Hall of Famer out there who said all of the time for the last 50 years that his hero was Pete Maravich, and he thought Pete Maravich was just a god, and that was Isaiah Thomas. Not was, yeah. Is. Isaiah Thomas always said Pete Maravich. He's the only one that I ever heard. But Maravich didn't work at the NBA level anywhere near the way it did in college. It just didn't. And a lot of those problems had to do with the NBA at the time, had to do with the aspect of race with the Atlanta Hawks, the team he played for. Not the only team he played for. He played in New Orleans. But a lot of it was, I don't know, personal. I don't know if I'd call it animus. There was certainly jealousy. There was certainly a thought that Maravich thought he was above certain players. And you know all this history better than I do. Whatever the case was, and there was no three-point shot, of course. People need to hear that over and over again because they don't understand that Pete Maravich would have averaged 55 points a game, not 45. And so I am led to think about Maravich when I think about Caitlin Clark. And I have taken to, in the last couple of weeks, asking women who played the game at a high level what they think of Caitlin Clark. And they all think she's a great, one of the great college players of all time. But not everybody thinks it's going to convey. And some are just skeptical. They're not walking around saying, oh, she's overrated. Nobody's saying that. But when there's deep thought, which there should be, when there's not much deep thought about any sports now, because you have too many fools who are not smart enough to say anything about, oh, he's a hater. And they can't get past, she's a hater. And they can't get past that to examine anything deeply because they're not savvy enough to do it. So, but the women that I talk to are beyond savvy enough. And they, several of them say, you know, I don't know. I don't know that this is going to have the same or similar impact that it does in the college game. Let's see. And I have taken just an approach. You know what? I don't need to answer this question. Let her answer it. Let's see. Let the game answer it. Let the culture answer it. And I hope she has a great career because she's great for the sport. She's carried it. She has been to college basketball this year where Deion Sanders was to college football in the fall. They carried it because the product isn't any damn good anymore overall. The product isn't what it was 10, 20, God knows not 30, 40, 50 years. It isn't the product. But those of us who have watched it, I don't care what 30-year-olds say. I don't give a damn. I care what people who've watched it and consumed it for 30 or 40 years say. And Caitlin Clark has been that important. Tony, I started watching Caitlin Clark long before it became fashionable just because she plays at a place where I'm familiar. And I was like, you know, I had the coaches in Northwestern, you know, say, you watching this kid, this freshman, Caitlin Clark? No. Well, you need to. Joe McEwen, others that I know and like to listen to. So I'm interested. I'm going to watch. I'm glad she's going to be in Indiana. I'm glad she's going to be a Midwestern girl. That means something to me. That they can fill that field house, the best arena in, with apologies to Madison Square Garden, which is the most important arena in basketball. The best arena in basketball is whatever they're calling that field house where the Pacers play. And I presume that is also where the women's team plays.
I presume too. I don't know.
I presume, but I can't wait to watch it. I can't wait. The influx of great female players into the WNBA. I can't wait to see, you know, what that's going to look like at this next level because they're the stars of the game. There's not anybody listening to us, even fanatics, who can tell you who the top three players are going to be in the NBA draft this year. They can't. I do it for a living, and I can't. But I can tell you about Caitlin Clark, though.
Yeah. I will say this. I watched UConn against Seton Hall yesterday. And Seton Hall's a pretty good team. They're not a great team. They're not as good as Creighton. You know, Creighton's really good in the Big East.
Yep.
And they're not as good as Creighton. And Marquette's really good in the Big East. And those three teams are really good. But if UConn played like that in a tournament, they'd win the tournament. I mean, they looked...
Again.
You know, Mike, they were very impressive. Yeah, yeah.
Tony, they do. And I watched them get their doors blown off by Creighton last week.
Yes,
and then I watched Creighton Marquette. Creighton Marquette was a terrific game, even though Marquette was missing a couple of starters.
Missing a guy.
Only in the last 2 weeks, you know, have I said to myself, okay, it's time to put away whatever, you know, resentment I have about men's college basketball now and watch. And so I've done that. And I'm trying to get prepared to be able to, you know, reasonably, incredibly discuss college basketball, which is only our jobs, over the next 5 weeks. I'm watching these games too. I'm watching them with you. And I'm not saying they're not great. I watched Gonzaga St. Mary's at midnight the other night. And Gonzaga went in there and took a win when Gonzaga often goes into St. Mary's and cannot win. So I'm watching these games now. And there are some really good teams, and there are some really good players. But, Tony, you can't watch 1 minute, and you know this now because you've been watching this stuff fanatically for the last few weeks. There's not one description of one player that doesn't include the transfer from fill-in-the-blank. And he transferred from fill-in-the-blank. Every damn player.
Yeah.
And so the game, the product, not the game, the product is, it ain't good. It ain't what it used to be. It ain't what I hope it returns to. And I'm not saying I don't want kids to have the same freedom as coaches or sports writers or anybody to move in. I'm not saying that. All I'm saying is it ain't, the product ain't that good right now. And so I'm watching it, hoping that, you know, we will be able to, the game will shine through it. The game will overtake the product is what I'm hoping will happen over the next month.
Well, we'll see. All right, we'll see. I'll talk to you later. Thank you.
All right, Tom.
Michael Wilbon, boys and girls, we'll take a break. Come back with Charlie Steiner. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
No more lies a day. I got bills to pay, and it's my right to say when my days are done. I got wants and needs.
Once again, this is Year of the Buffalo. This is a song called Hands That Bleed. And Michael, if people want to send in their original music like Year of the Buffalo, how do they do it?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@tonykornheisershow.com.
Year of the Buffalo plays in my old and dear friend, Charlie Steiner, from the neighboring town of Malvern, where I grew up in Lynbrook. I went to Hewlett High School, though, and Charlie went to Malvern High School with our mutual friend, Jody Forstadt. You are sitting on the most exciting spring training story in baseball, and undoubtedly the most exciting story in baseball. You broadcast the Los Angeles Dodgers. And it's, I said this the other day on PTI, Charlie, that, you know, it's like there's two divisions in baseball. There's the Dodgers over here and there's everybody else over there. Is it, you know, you've been doing this a long time and you've been involved in teams that have won the World Series and you followed the Dodgers your whole life and they've had some of the greatest players in the universe of baseball. How exciting does this feel?
You know what it feels like? It feels like being with the Yankees in the late 1900s and 2001, 2, 3, and 4, where they are more than just a team, they are an event. There will be 162 events played by the Dodgers with their hope of having 19 big games in October. So it's fascinating. They've got the most famous baseball player on the planet.
Yes.
They've got this great young pitcher, Yamamoto. They've got a team that wins 100 games a year, and they seemingly are just getting better. And, oh, by the way, you still have Freeman, maybe the best first baseman in the game. Betts, now maybe the best second baseman in the game. It's fascinating. They are so good, and they are star-studded. So wherever they go, they'll be the team that is wearing the black hat game in and game out on the road and, of course, heroes at home.
Yeah, I mean, the signing of Ohtani was by so many miles the biggest story in the baseball hot stove. Everybody knew somebody was going to sign him, a lot of people figured the Dodgers, but that didn't mean it was actually going to happen. And then the details of his contract come out. And he's tied to the GM and he's deferring so much money. What do you make of all? What do you make of him landing? Well, he was in L.A. before, although south of L.A., but now he lands in L.A. What is that like in Los Angeles?
Well, he's now baseball's biggest star on a team that is iconic. I mean, it is just seemingly a match made in heaven. And from the Dodger point of view, they didn't just get Ohtani. They bought Japan. I mean, right now, the Dodgers are as big a team on that side of the Pacific as any. You know, everybody here, there, and everywhere is now wearing number 17. And, oh, by the way, he can flat out play. The thing about Ohtani, watching him over the years, how big he is. He's 6'4", listed at 210. He's certainly 6'4". I think he's probably a little heavier than the 210. But whatever it is, he has got enormous talent. And the thought occurred to me the other day, now that he's going to be here for a decade, and you've got Freeman and you've got Betts, the Dodgers will not need a DH for a decade.
That's
nobody.
Right.
Nobody.
That's right. Right. No, you're right. So you're right about
like
that.
Like Max Muncy, who, you know, had been a DH largely, played some third base. He better learn to play third base real good for a real long time. So that, you know, so you have DH is locked in, first base locked in, second base locked in. They've got the players, and they've got the star quality. You know, again, hearkening back to my Yankee years, when we went to Japan, for instance, and you had Matsui, and you had Jeter and
Tanaka
and all of that. It was just, Ohtani, is Elvis, and the rest of the Dodgers are a bunch of Jordanaires.
No, and I mean, I get that, and everybody wants to see him, which is why I was a little bit surprised, I don't know, about a week ago when he announced he had gotten married. Well, I mean, you just say, really? You got married? What do you do? You know, that was so weird, right, Charlie? Didn't that feel weird?
Of course it did. I mean, nobody on the Dodgers knew. Trout had no idea. I mean, again, he has managed to be a major star since about the time he was 16 years old. So he is used to the attention. And what he's also used to is creating the environment around him. So he will parcel out information about what he's doing or not doing as he see fits, and there's nobody there to say, come on, man, because he can, and he does.
Yeah, no, I get that. Well, let me go to the other side of the fence, though.
Sure.
Because from where you sit, broadcasting Dodger games is going to be thrilling, and everywhere you go, everybody wants to see Ohtani and the rest of the team, because it's not like the Dodgers, excuse me, or the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Dodgers are one of the great franchises, and Dodgers and Yankees and Braves and Giants are it. So that gets me to the Giants. A lot of criticism, Logan Webb in particular, a lot of criticism. What are they doing, these Dodgers? I hate those guys now. What do the Dodgers, and what do you make of that, of the sort of criticism that the Dodgers are piling on now?
Again, I go back 20 years to the Yankees. What's the difference? People were complaining about the Yankees and their payroll all those years, and they came into town with the Black Hats, and of course they established that great rivalry with the Red Sox. Now you've got the Dodgers and presumably the Atlanta Braves as some rivalry now in the National League. Look, the Dodgers win 100 games a year. 100 games a year. And this is, what, the ninth year for Dave Roberts as the manager. And he's won two-thirds of his games as the manager. So this is a good team. It also happens to be star-studded, and people want to come out and watch them play.
Well, the star-studded stuff is Ohtani for sure, and it looks like Yamamoto as well. There has never been a Japanese pitcher who has had a great career in the United States. Nomo and Tanaka and Arabu and Yu Darvish have had great moments, but yeah, not a great career. Yamamoto could be the first, right?
Well, we got 10 years to figure that out. But, you know, watching him on a limited sample size in Glendale, mm-hmm, Arizona, it looks like he's got the goods. You look at the numbers that he had in Japan, he's got the goods. And so the Dodgers could afford to go all in with him. And, you know, you look at the Dodgers and the star-studded nature of them. We're not going to see Kershaw till maybe the All-Star break. Who knows? And Bueller, who knows? These guys will be coming in the second half of the season. So you've got this kid. And, oh, by the way, they get Glass now from Tampa Bay. So they've got a great rotation. The bullpen is really solid. And, oh, by the way, they can hit. So you look at them. Granted, it's the third or fourth day of March. They don't really have a significant weakness on this team. Starting, relieving, offense has been great. Questionable, perhaps, at shortstop with Gavin Lux. We'll see. But, you know, look, they can hit, they can run, they can throw, they can pitch. They got the whole deal. And, oh, by the way, they've got stars.
It's interesting because the Dodgers, Cody Bellinger played there. Star, gone. Corey Seager played there. Star, gone. Trey Turner played there. Star, Justin Turner played, right? The Dodgers have turned it over in the last 2 to 4 years, and they are still star-studded. Are there any of those guys you wish was back?
You know, you look back at look at how they have played. Not really. You know, Trey Turner was terrific. Seager is great. Right now they've got Gavin Lux at short. But you know, then you still, in that period of time, Freddie Freeman came in. Betts came in from right to play second. He may be the best second baseman in the game after having been the best right fielder in the game. So they have this ability. The front office has been fabulous. They know how and where to fill in the blanks, and they've done it expertly. I mean, you can't take that away from them.
All right, it leads to a specific question, and you mentioned Dave Roberts before. There is more pressure on Dave Roberts than any other manager in baseball. I can't imagine I can't imagine the Dodgers not getting to the playoffs, but I can imagine the Braves or the Phillies beating them because they've done that before, right? The pressure on Dave Roberts must be extraordinary.
He's been through the drill. Yes. The answer is yes. Is it fair? Probably not. You know, nobody ever complained about Marv Levy as a football coach.
That's right.
It's one of those that I just never bought into the criticism that he has taken. You play 162 games to win 19. You've got to be in it to win it. They have been in it. And, you know, and sometimes you just come up short, or sometimes you just play lousy for 3 or 4 games and your season's done.
One of the biggest surprises in my whole time watching baseball was that last year Arizona played Texas in the World Series. You know what I mean? I mean, if you told me that in July, I would have said, no, there's no way. There's no way. Because the Dodgers and the Braves and the Phillies and the Orioles, there's just no way that's ever going to happen. Were you as surprised as I?
Dumbfounded. You know, again, Arizona got hot. You know, and San Diego, the previous, got hot. So it's going in those short series, as they say, anything can happen, and did. But again, here it is. It's the 3rd or 4th of March, and we'll worry about October and October. But 162 games, it's a fair assumption they're going to win 100 and something. The only question is, how many is a something?
No, I agree with that. All right, I should tell people, because we like to tell the truth around here, that this is actually, this conversation is taking place on Sunday evening to make everything easier for everybody. And I'll get you out of here on this. Where is the Aloha Tower calendar? You've had it for so many years. Where is it?
It is in the same place it has been. I will be more than happy to place it in a package that will be sent directly to you, and you can fire it for the next 4 or 5 years.
Have you had it that long? You haven't had it that long, have you?
It just seems that way.
Oh, you know, the boy.
Calendar says 1967.
And it's going to stay that. It's going to stay that way for a long time. All right, it's great to talk with you, and I envy you this year, because you're sitting on the most exciting team in baseball, and everybody wants to see it. Good for you. I hope we talk soon. Thank you, Charlie.
Thanks, pal.
Charlie Steiner, boys and girls. We will take a break. We'll have email and jingle when we return. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
That is Kelly Vikstrom Hoyt, and that's an accordion.
Yes.
That's how you play it.
You know, squeeze box.
Squeeze box. Yeah. Yeah, the Who. Yeah. You want to do the Bethesda Bagel ad?
Yes, and by the way, belated happy birthday to Roger Daltrey. Turned 80 last week.
Good for him.
Bethesda Bagels, we love them. You'll as well. Just go to BethesdaBagels.com for the location in the D.C. area nearest you, then pop on in, and you will be thrilled.
That's going to do it for us today. Before we get to the mailbag, let me just say, riding along on my calaboose, still trying to get her belt unloosed. All the way home, I held a grudge for the safety belt that wouldn't budge. Cruising and playing a radio with no particular place to go. That's the name of the song, No Particular Place to Go. That's Charles F. Berry. Right? You know, really, you want to do a Mount Rushmore of American rock and roll? That's Charles F. Berry.
Yes.
Thanks to our guests today, Michael Wilbon, Charlie Steiner. Thanks as well to today's sponsors. Remember, you can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Play, and Odyssey. Get the show through Apple. You can leave us a review, which would be
new
nice.
New month, new code. Yeah. That I apologize for those who are trying to use TKT.
It's not T?
No. We have a new code for March. So with a big basketball tournament coming up, TK Mouse, even if your team flushes it, we want you to be looking good with some of the latest spring offerings from Johnny O. TK Mouse.
TK Mouse. That's
it's not
really
set up,
good.
But I'm going to work on that. And make sure that it's good for all of our listeners.
All right. From Mark Mello, who's the head sports turf manager of the Philadelphia Union in Claymont, Delaware. The Philadelphia Union, I believe, is a soccer team.
I believe you are correct.
Listen to this, Michael. This will please you a lot because it's about a schoolmate. It has come to my attention that fellow little Jonathan Tannenwald, chief soccer correspondent for the Philadelphia Inquirer, has won an Associated Press Sports Editor's Award for national beat writing. He is my go-to for news about Major League Soccer, the Philadelphia Union, and the beautiful game as a whole. I look forward to getting to meet him soon enough at, oh, God help us, Subaru Park. I would like to be considered for the role of the official MLS sports turf manager of the show. If it's not already taken, it's not taken. It's yours. I'd invite you to a game, but you don't seem like a standing room only type of guy. Mm. No, I'm not.
Nah.
But isn't that great about Jonathan Tannenwald?
It's the best.
Good
he gave
for
me
him.
My first tour of the Penn campus before Big Five.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's wonderful. From Benjamin Brunner, afternoon host and producer in Easton, Maryland. He writes, yeah, I was the guy who recommended Avis. Guess I flushed the mouse on that one. P.S. Avis is still my favorite. Okay, you flushed it.
From Did he
Earl
get the two
Brewer,
for one?
This is, I don't know. I don't know if he went on a Monday. But if he did, anyone can get it except people that refuse it. Like Nigel. Unbelievable. From Earl Brewer, who owns Virginia Elite Lacrosse. After hearing the story from the guy who said he lost his tooth on the way to first base, I said to no one in particular, I think I can top that. Early in my lacrosse coaching career, I had a young man on my team. We'll call him Gardner. He's not the greatest player on the team, but a nice young man. In the middle of the game with the action going up and down the field, I see Gardner on his hands and knees crawling around the field. The ref quickly blows his whistle and runs over to Gardner. Young man, did you lose a contact? Did you lose your mouthpiece? No, Gardner lost his eye. Unbeknownst to me and my other coaches, Gardner had a prosthetic eye and it fell out. A moment later, he spots his eye and, not missing a beat, runs off the field, takes off his helmet, unscrews the water cooler, dunks the eye in, pops it back in, helmet back on, right back out onto the field.
Mm.
A player standing next to me on the sideline says, Coach, I don't think we'll be drinking out of the cooler the rest of the night. Still makes me laugh to this day. From Steven Silberman in St. Augustine, Florida. Your story of losing a crown to a bag of Swedish fish got me thinking about my own lost tooth tail. Roughly 20 years ago, I lost a filling to a box of Juji fruit. Absolutely.
No, yeah.
After failing to try and repair it myself, I called my local Bethesda dentist, scheduled an appointment for the following day. After the repair was complete, I walked back into the lobby of the dental office only to find Wendy Rieger waiting for her appointment with the dentist. Yes, that Wendy Rieger. Oh, God, we miss her.
Yes, we
like
do.
So many Washingtonians, I had a huge crush on Wendy and did my best to make some small talk with her. About 6 weeks later, I was golfing with a buddy, and we were paired up with two others, including Dana Rieger, Wendy's brother. I mentioned to Dana how I met his sister at the dental office. Oh, yeah, he said she mentioned you. Really? Just the thought of that filled me with excitement as I quickly contemplated how I was going to ask Dana for his sister's number. No, she never mentioned you, he said. Now stop wasting time and tee off. And with that, my dreams were dashed. But I do owe my encounter with Wendy and all to the box of Juju fruit. That's very funny. From Mark Lynch in North Canby. Much better than Canby because it's North Canby.
Yeah, Indiana. North Canby is where you want to be.
I know where to call you on our birthday. What I didn't know before your Peter King interview was that we're also supposed to call you when we retire. I retired from youth ministry in December of 2015. Is Saturday, this Saturday, at 7:45 a.m. Eastern, a good time for me to call? From Charlie Warren in Fort Smith, Arkansas. I'm the CFO of Fort Smith Public Schools. Please send this classified ad to Peter King. Now hiring school bus driver. Hours that fit the senior citizen lifestyle. Up before dawn, midday nap, and early to bed. Paid health, dental, and vision insurance. No Cigna because we care. Subaru owners need not apply. We want drivers that love all children, not just their own. That's just wonderful. From Anthony Beeson, our friend Tony Beeson in Cincinnati. While listening to Friday's show in which Anthony Kim was discussed at length, all I could think of was, I wonder where he got that first name.
It's not probably not Matt Anthony Wayne.
Owen Labordais is a fifth grade teacher in Saudi Arabia. He teaches at the King Abdullah University of Science and Technology. He said, as I was listening to your Anthony Kim and Live takes, and then how you are going to fill the 50 states bucket list of sporting events, why not one up Bobby Ryan and be our guest in Saudi Arabia at next year's golf tournament? I work at an international school in the middle of nowhere here, and I spent the week spent the weekend at an empty course on the Red Sea in a crowd of 10 watching Phil and John Rahm. My 8-year-old son got every autograph he wanted within minutes. It was not the loud, traditional packed stadium you would find in South Dakota or Idaho, but it is a unique sport experience in its own. You can even enjoy some of my personal sleepy ant brewing in the evenings.
Sleepy Ant Brewings.
I guess he must make beer.
I guess, yeah.
Can you have beer in Saudi Arabia?
I didn't think you were allowed to.
I'm not sure. I don't know. From Josh Cromwell in Moselle, Mississippi. I have one quibble with your top five in-person sporting events. How did the Marvin Gaye anthem not crack the top five? I guess you could dismiss it on a technicality since it wasn't actually part of the game action during that All-Star game. But I'd argue it absolutely still belongs on the list. I wouldn't have thought of that, to be honest.
And by the way, Bob texted me after the show.
With his top five?
Because remember, he was one shy. I couldn't remember the last one. It was the Tuck Rule game.
Oh, okay.
The Brady Raiders right. game.
From Rick DeSedlo in East Winthrop, Maine. Never been to Maine? And you call yourself an I-95 guy? Shame on you. I should have been to Maine. From James K. from North Reading, Massachusetts, stuck between Revere and Marblehead. Great. How soon until Wilbon considers Australia to be in the Midwest, despite the many thousands of miles between it and Toronto? John in North Herndon, Virginia. I just listened to your discussion about stadium naming rights. Even after the Super Bowl was played in Las Vegas, I still have no idea what Allegiant does. Neither do I.
Yeah.
Just because the Washington football team played at FedEx Field, I didn't choose FedEx versus UPS. I try not to pay attention to marketing unless I'm shopping for a specific item. I skip commercials whenever possible, but I'm off to Bagel City.
Well, that's the one.
From Matt in Thomaston, Connecticut.
In the heart of Rockville.
I have four words for Nike. What?
That's right. In the heart of Rockville. Yeah. Right?
Matt from Thomaston, Connecticut. Four words for Nike. Rope and a yardstick. Yeah. Please tell Uncle Tim in San Diego to eat it. Yeah. No, this is... He's right. He's right. You can't just body scan.
It's not one size fits all.
It just doesn't work that way. No. From our one great friend Claire Natola. Yeah, fits four.
Fits four, yeah.
One of the groups is called Baggy. How would you like to be in the Baggy group? Claire Natola. Let James and Ostrander know that I could toss a roll of garbage man quarters from my back door and it would land in Ostrander. My cat sitter lives in Ostrander. Hey, James, if she's ever available when I go out of town, could you stop by to feed Apollo once a day? From David Fisher in Harrisburg, South Dakota.
I didn't realize it was Harrisburg, South Dakota.
No, I did not either. I've been reading your work since a bandwagoning, listening to since the beginning at WTEM. I recently relocated after 35 years from Washington to Harrisburg, South Dakota, just south of Sioux Falls, in order to be closer to the woman I'm related to by marriage as parents. Thank God I did. Otherwise, how would I be able to let Patrick Sitter know that the new traffic circle on Highway 11 in Harrisburg is now open and traffic is flowing beautifully?
That's wonderful.
From Drew Lowry in Chevy Chase. The other day when you quoted the lyrics to Jungle Land, it reminded me of a Bruce Springsteen concert my wife and I attended. It was in 2009 in Baltimore. Halfway through the show, the band performed Jungle Land, which, of course, has the extended sax solo by Clarence Thomas. By 2009, Clarence was in very poor health. He could hardly stand for more than a few minutes. He used to come out with a stool and sit for some of the concerts. For most of the concerts, Clarence sat on a bar stool, stage right, but still had quite a presence. A smile from Clarence could light up a small country. Clarence sat in darkness for the first part of Jungle Land before gingerly moving to front and center for a solo. He looked exhausted and in pain, but when his time came, he stood, and with what he had to give, he delivered. He delivered with majestic force and extraordinary emotional force. Magnificent brute force, mind over matter performance. The sound of Clarence's saxophone filled the arena and provided ample evidence that one person's spirit can cast a very large shadow. Near the end of my solo, my wife whispered, "Look around." I saw thousands of people quietly standing and giving Clarence their complete attention. Almost no one said a word. After I stopped scanning the crowd, my wife said, "He earned that silence." He did. He really did. Once Clarence's solo was finished, Springsteen helped him walk back to his position on stage. Had a very long embrace and quiet conversation before Clarence slumped down on his bar stool. It was the last time he ever performed that solo on tour. There was something about his solo. The audience's full attention, the respectful silence, it was overwhelming. It's a memory I hope I don't lose anytime soon. And I thought a memory worth sharing with the good Dr. Hoff Woff. Yeah, from Drew Lowry. Thank you very much.
That is lovely.
From Andrew Vogelin, Spokane, Washington. When Nigel proclaimed that Georgetown was 9-19 on the season during Wednesday's pod, let's just admit we were all thinking the same thing. They got a realistic shot at 9-20.
I think they're there now.
I think they are at 9-20 when they blew a 15-point lead.
Yes.
I think they're there now. All right, if you're out on your bike tonight, as always, everyone, do wear white.
Later, he gets the rebound, passes it to the man, shoots it, and boom goes the dynamite.
Moon hang low up in the sky. Streets run red with blood, and you know why. 'Cause they are coming, they're coming for me. They are coming. It was fast living and the money too, and I had loving sweet as honeydew. But now they're coming, they're coming for me. They are coming. Now if I go, honey, let me go down the river on the Ohio. Bury me deep in the water. If I go, honey, let me go down the river on the Ohio. Bury me deep in the water wide. I'll see you on the other side. I'll see you on the other side.
No more lies a day, I got bills to pay, and it's my right to say when my days are done. I got wants and needs, I got hands that bleed, 'cause there are mouths to feed, more than one. This old road I'm heading down again, like I'd always done before. These old lies I tell myself again, how this time it just means more. I got aches and pains, I got eyes that strain to see what I've gained in losing you. I can't sleep at night, I should have held you tight, thought I knew wrong from right, but that ain't true. This old road I'm heading down again, like I'd always done before. These old lies I tell myself again, how this time it just means more. How this time it just means more. We'll be right back.
said you needed more when you walked out the door. What's all the fighting for between you and me? I know I've done you wrong. That's why I wrote this damn song. Thought we'd just move along, too blind to see. Like I'd always done before. These old lies I tell myself again. How this time it just means more. This old road I'm heading down again. Like I'd always done before. These old lies I tell myself. This time it just means more. This time.